Yud Tes Iyar, Friday the 24th of May, Rabbi Shaul Strom, Parashathim.
What was the title?
Parashathim.
He hasn't got a title.
Scott, thank you very much for inviting me back once again. It's always a pleasure to be here, to see you all back in London. There's a famous Rashi at the beginning of this Exedra, which is often used as just a way of, as an expression, Ma'ani and Shmita Eitzel HaSinai. But Mitzvah Hashem, I'd like to speak through the parasha and hopefully come to a greater insight of what's Rashi's real question, Ma'ani and Shmita Eitzel HaSinai. So this week's parasha speaks primarily. Most of the parasha or the beginning at least, of the parasha is talking about Shemitah, and the rest of the parasha goes through Yovel and eventually goes into certain dinim of Bein Adam, of Non Chaveiro, and monetary matters and how a person is supposed to deal in business. But there's a very interesting, there's two midrashim which I'd like to point out, which are very interesting. It says, B'shar Sheik Dima Yisro, people know this, people know this medrash quite well. It says, "B'shar she'ekdimu Yisrael naseh l'nishma." When Klal Yisrael got up and they said, "Naseh before nishma," Baskol yotza Baskol v'omro lohem mi gila rozeh l'bonai. A Baskol went out from Shemayim and it said, "Who told Klal Yisrael? Who told my children this secret?" That Malachi Ashor is Mishtamshim Boy, that only the angels, until now, knew how to use. Because it says, Dichsev, says the Medrash, Giboyre Koyach, Oyseh Devorei, Lishmoyah Bekol Devorei. Those who are Giboyre Koyach, are full of strength and girdled with might, Oyseh Devorei, they do my words, Lishmoyah Bekol Devorei, to listen to my words. With a coil, okay. And this medrash is I'm sure we're going to hear about it a lot, Mitzvah Shem, in the upcoming weeks on the way up to Shavuos. What shaychus has this got to Shemitah, right? What shaychus has this got to this week's parasha? Says what's interesting is there's another very similar medrash. It says, "B'noyik shav olam." It's usual in the world, Adam Isa. B'noyin Shabbat Olam Adam Oysa, Geboyre Koyach Devoroi. B'noyin Shabbat Olam, if you look in the world, you'll see there's a certain type of person, says the Medrash, Geboyre Koyach Oysa Devoroi, B'makos of Medabe. Who, which type of people are Geboyre Koyach, those girdled with strength that heed to Hashem's word? Omar Rabbi Yitzchok, B'shomrei Shviyas HaKos of Medabe. The Pasuk is talking about those who keep Shemitah. Shema l'shay yemois hashono v'din chomi chekalia baria karma baria v'yohiv, which means that a person says most people they come along and they do mitzvahs for a day, for a week, for a month. Mitzvahs are something which is temporary. When it comes to Shemitah, there's a certain type of person that for an entire year he comes along and he sees his kromim, he sees his vineyards every single day, and he holds back and he says he doesn't do anything. This is called Giboyre Koyach Oyseh Dvaro. Is there a greater gibor than that? That's what the Medrash asks. Okay, so we have two Midrashim that seemingly speak about the same idea. Giboyre Koyach Oyseh Dvaro, those who are called Giboyre Koyach. But we also know that there's 613 mitzvahs, and we know that there's loads of mitzvahs, bechlal, that are considered far greater than other mitzvahs. And Shemitah, of course, is considered a great mitzvah. But in what way, first of all, do we use this lotion of Gibori Koyach Eitzel Devaroi specifically to these two? And also, the general question, which a lot of us may have asked on this week's parasha, which is, you open up the parasha and it says, Redam Hashem Bahar Sinai Neimoi. And says Rashi straight away, why does it say about Sinai? Ma'ashmita Nemra Misinai, Akkola Terakula Nemra Misinai. The same as Shmita is said by Hasina, also all the mitzvahs are said by Hasina. And the question is, okay, I know all the mitzvahs said by Hasinai, but still, why by Shmita do we have to say Kol HaMitzvahs Kolim Nevi'im Hasinai? There's plenty of other mitzvahs which we could have also said. Ma, Prusbul. Okay, let's go to this. Ma, it could have been any other mitzvah. Ma Lulav, Ma Pesach, Ma Rosh Hashanah, Ma Shofar. And any of these ideas it could have said. Ma, this was said by Hasinai, Af Kulo Nemrom Yisinai. So the question is, why specifically Shmita did we point out? And perhaps maybe we'll look into, we'll see the Hemshach HaPsukim, we'll see a couple of words what the Psukim say, and maybe we'll try and understand why this is the case. Why Shmita is seemingly so central in the theme of Hasinai and Kol HaMitzvahs Kulo Nemrom Yisinai. So there's another question which I'm sure other people have spoken about, which is the Lashon of the Pasuk. Yeah, because the Pasuk says, I don't have a Chumash here, but the order of the Pasuk, of the Psukim, it's okay. The order of the Psukim, when it comes to Shmita, is that, first of all, it says that you're supposed to keep Sheva Shonim, Sheva Pa'omim, then it says, and the land will reap its fruits and yours. And then comes along the pasuk and it says, and if you were to say, what should we eat on the seventh year? We haven't gathered the tvuah. Says the pasuk avtocha, v'tzivisias berchosi lochem bashon hashishis. I will promise you, I will command my bracha, I'll command my blessing on the land on the sixth year. And the sixth year will reap benefit for the next 3 years. Which, by the way, it's very famous. The Chasam Sofer said that, used to say that this is one of the, there's many people who have, especially in the time of the Chasam Sofer, who contested the validity of Torah Mesinai. Perhaps the Torah wasn't, especially the Neolog movement in Hungary at the time, contested the entire idea. Maybe it was man-written. Eventually, the Reform and the Conservative possibly have adopted this nowadays. Says the Chasam Sofer actually that this pasuk itself is a proof as to the validity, as to the idea of Torah Mesinai. Because he said any man-made Torah wouldn't possibly stand on its legs, promising an entire nation avtocha every single shmita, which happens still nowadays, that every 3 years you're going to have a 3-year bounty crop. As soon as the first or second year didn't happen, they just closed shop and say, well, obviously this is a fraud. So the Chasam Sofer bases the entire validity of Torah Mesinai on this pasuk. But there's another question on this pasuk, which perhaps we can understand a bit better. Which is, the pasuk says, v'chi soimru. So first of all, there's very few, if not any mitzvahs, where the Torah says, the Torah poses that you have to actually ask a question. Okay, perhaps the Gadot HaLevincha is the only other one. But even so, you don't have to actively ask. It says, and if you would ask, Bashana, if you would ask what you're going to eat, then I'll tell you, v'sivisiyas b'chosi b'shana ashishis. And the question is, if you think about it, and the Madrigas Odom, Reb Yosef Yosel Horovitz, the altar of Nevaduk, asked this question. An entire section of his book is based on this question, which is, who's going to, what person is the Torah describing when it says that you're going to ask Ma Noichal? And if we're talking about on the sixth year, so a person hasn't reached that stage yet. Seventh year is really the next year to come. On Shmita itself, it's no point to him worrying about it. And on the eighth year, if he's talking about the eighth year, then either he's already seen the sixth year bounty crop, he's already seen this Tzivisiyas B'chosi. So, and what type of person are we talking about, B'chlal? But generally, this is a question. Why does the Torah form this bracha in this way? And there's many that answer this question. Probably the most famous is the Daz Kenim and the Rabban. They both ask this question, and the standard teret which is given for this question is that which person is going to ask? Yeah, there's two types of people that could be talking about. Yeah, it could be a person who either believes that it's going to happen, or a person who has undergone Shemitah, but he's not sure what's really going to happen. And therefore, what happens if a person, Tucker, wouldn't ask? If a person would sit back and say, I'm not asking this question, I don't care, it's not in my control. This is not something which I have a capability to make a difference of, to make a difference to. Says the Ramban, such a person, Avada will get the bracha, but he'll get the bracha even without asking. Once a person goes and asks, that means at some point in his journey, he has a question, how is this actually going to happen? Then you're going to need a Avtocha of Hashem. But Avada, the world was created in a way where you only need to ask. Every single Shemitah, there's an inbuilt bracha. I saw a very interesting pshat, which is actually based on a Medrash by Yosef HaTzadik. Because the Medrash by Yosef HaTzadik says that it speaks about Yosef HaTzadik, and the Medrash says that Yosef HaTzadik, at the time that he was chucked into the pit of Mitzrayim, he was both Miktanei Emunah and he was both Megadolei Emunah. He was both attributed to being someone who Mamish had one of the strongest Emunahs at the time, and at the same time he had a very weak Emunah. Now the question is that how could Yosef HaTzadik have been both? He was either someone at the time he had a very strong Emunah, or he's someone who Taka didn't have a strong Emunah. So he says that Yosef HaTzadik, he says there's two types of ways we can relate to the way we see Yad Hashem in this world. Either you can be someone who passively kind of assumes that a ness is going to happen. You can passively assume that, yeah, my life is controlled by Hashem, and therefore it's going to happen. Now, which type of person is this? What kind of matzav is this person in? The type of matzav a person like that is in is someone, you go to Eretz Yisrael, and you go to anyone who's walking around collecting money in any of the shuls, or anyone living in an area where, generally speaking, they're not rampant with panosa. You ask them, how are you going to manage? How are you going to marry off your 10, 12, 13, 14, 15 kids? He'll say, me or there, I manage the last 10, I'm going to manage the next 10. So he says very interestingly, he says that it's sometimes it's easier for us to have a munah where we're at a backstop, where at this point there's no way of going further. I know that, listen, I can't do anything about it. So obviously there's going to be Yad Hashem involved in my life. Obviously otherwise I've got no way of moving forward. He says, however, there's a different type of person. It's like a person who has it all, who has everything, Baruch Hashem, he has money, he has the panasa, and still for him to turn around and say, this has nothing to do with me, this has got to do with Hashem, that's an elevated status. So Yosef HaTzadik was shot at the time that he was in the, at the time was, that he was in the pit, generally speaking, he was Miktanei Emunah. He went to ask the Sarah Mashkim, Sarah Oifim, to be able to get him out. And we know that the Torah actually says that because we know that he was admonished as a result and he got kept longer. But nevertheless, there's a different, nevertheless, at the same time, he was Kizmi Gedoli Emunah. Why? Because Yosef realized that right now he was in the pit. Now, the pit of Mitzrayim meant that this guy wasn't getting out again. That's where he was going to die. He was going to be taken out in a casket. But what did Yosef HaTzadik do? Yosef HaTzadik realized that, no, wait a second, if I want to strengthen my Emunah in this stage, in this place, I'm going to have to try and look for some kind of way where I can get myself out of here. Some kind of way where I can look for another option. And even so, if I still have Emunah, that's already a bigger darga. So the same Yosef HaTzadik that seemingly showed everyone that he was, that he didn't have that heightened level of Emunah, was in fact probably introduced us to this value of having a level of Emunah where everything is okay for you and you still have to turn around and say, this doesn't come from me. Says the Aruch Chaim that this is the type of Emunah that we're talking about when we're talking about Shemitah. We're talking about Shemitah, Enoch and Ami, it could be the sixth year, you already see all the bound all the bounty here, you'll see that it's all coming and it's filling up your storehouses. And at the time you might say, okay, so I don't need any more to use the lessons of what Shemitah's there to teach us. I don't need that anymore. Says the Torah, no, but you should actually go ahead and question, where does everything really come from? Where does everything really come from? How do I get to this? How do I receive what I'm receiving? And if that's the case with Sivisias Berchosi, if that's the case, then you will get the bracha, which is the true bracha of what Shemitah is really trying to give us. The true bracha of what Shemitah is trying to give us, and Ochanami, is also the fact that we'll get this third year crop and everything will go smoothly. But the additional kind of behind the surface is the heightened level of emunah in Hashem, which maybe we won't see at face value. So with this, I saw a very interesting idea from Rav Zisha. Rav Zisha said, why can't such a person just remain silent? Why does he have to ask? Why does he have to ask Bechlal what's going on?
He's worried.
Sorry?
He's worried.
Because he's worried, right. But if someone's at a level of emunah, why does he have to ask? No. See, why does he have to ask? Why can't he just keep silent? And just imagine that everything's going to work out well. So he says that Lemaisa, for a person that's at a level of emunah, he knows that the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bechlal created this world was a stakel b'reisa b'ri olma. He looked at the world and he saw, and he created the world as a result of it. That means that Shemitah, no Shemitah, Yovel, no Yovel, the entire world will exist on this level. Even if we wouldn't get involved, my hishtadlus, what exactly I do in my life is irrelevant, because this world has a mechanical process that's going to go the way that Hashem wants it, in any case. So be'etzem, there's no need for a bracha v'tzivisias berchosi. As soon as Hashem created Shemitah, he didn't need to come along and say, v'tzivisias berchosi v'ashana ashishis. Right? He doesn't need to. L'chaira, you only need the Sivisias Berchosi if someone doesn't believe that the world was created in a way that mechanically will sort itself out and it's workable with a Shemitah in the middle. It's only for a person who doesn't believe that you'd need an active Sivisias Berchosi. So he says that Taka, when it says v'chisomru, it's not talking about someone that has that true level. Because someone who hasn't got that true level will be able to passively go through Shemitah, and through the process of Shemitah, he will notice that there must be something hidden below the surface here, a level of emunah, which I'm supposed to be understanding, which is hidden below the surface, that even if I don't do any hishtadlus this year, even if I just step back, and I don't do anything, nevertheless, it will still... I will still be able to get this bracha, and I'll still understand the values of emunah. Now the question is, how can you understand the values if no one's teaching you? And for that we have to, if no one's teaching you, if the Torah is not telling you actively, these are the values that Shemitah is trying to teach you, the value of emunah, the value of betochen, the value of not doing anything, and it's still going ahead. If that's the case, then how are we supposed to understand it?
We can learn from the world to see the
Hatzai Hashem. So obviously you can learn from the world, but seemingly that wouldn't be a Shemitah, first of all. Then you wouldn't need to, you'd be able to look around and just work out the whole world from where it is. It seems to be that Shemitah is supposed to be teaching you something, and the Torah should be focusing you in that direction. Says, for that we have to come to the Medrash. The Medrash, the second Medrash that we said, the Oysa Devaroi, who are those who are Geboire Koyach Oysa Devaroi? These are, first of all, the Shomri Shvi'is, and second, we saw the first Medrash said these were b'shor she'dim Yisrael nasa l'nishma. On that, the Medrash says gibori koyach oysa dvarim. Rav Shimon ben Pekah says something amazing and fascinating. He says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at the time when the Torah was given, not a bird chirped in the world. There wasn't a sound. We know the Medrash says that no one moved. The entire world stopped. Not a bird chirped. Not a crow. The entire world was at the standstill point. So the way we understand that is because Hashem's voice overtook the world and Hashem's koyach stopped everything. Says Rav Shimon Pinchas, he says that no. He says, really, Mamet HaSinai is something which occurs to us constantly. Mamet HaSinai happens to us the entire time. However, there's always noise around. It's very hard to focus on the Mamet HaSinai. It's very hard to focus on the giving of the Torah, on Hashem's Chasodim, where He gives us the Torah as a day in, day out activity. He says, however, when the entire world goes silent, at that point you can hear Hashem's world. He says, the reason why everything went silent and everything stopped moving wasn't because of Matan Torah. He says, Matan Torah happened because the entire world went silent. When the entire world stops listening, the koyach that silence has is a koyach of Matan Torah.
And you can hear the Bas Kol also, which is
right, so when you're silent, you can sometimes hear these messages. So with that, we can understand, I think, Ma'in Yishmita, Eitzel Har Sinai. Shmita and Har Sinai have one thing which is very strongly linked. It's the idea that if you would sit back and stop and focus on the mitzvos and the Noyeg Sheba Olam, the way the world works, for a bit of time, and you'll try and block out all the noise, all the sound waves, all the hishtadlus, which everyone does with that, the result of that is emunah. The result of that is, on one extreme, if the entire world does that, it is Mamet Har Sinai. And on the other extreme, on each personal level, the place where the Torah wants you to be is a matzav of shmita, where you can sit back, and the Torah says, Shabbos Lashem. And Shabbat, why does the Torah call it Shabbos Lashem? Why doesn't the Torah call it any other mitzvah isn't called Shabbos? Why is it called Shabbos? Shabbos means to rest. Shabbos means, and the truth is that Shabbos and Shmita have this in common, that the mitzvah of Shabbos in its face value, the Rambam was very famous for saying that a person could be shemesh Shabbos by sitting in bed and really not doing anything. Sheva al tasa, a person sits the entire Shabbos, he could be keep Shabbos. It might not be then the Shabbos in its optimum state, but a person really goes through, he can passively keep Shabbos. Because Shabbos is also this prospect of sitting back and saying, the world needs a shvisa, the world needs to stop, the world needs to remain silent, in order for the world to carry on another 7 days. And Shmita echoes the same idea. That Shmita echoes the idea that if a person wants to detach himself from reality, and just let the silence, just let the inactivity take effect, if he wants to lower the volume of everything's happening, then Taka, you will hear the Emun of Hashem, you'll hear the way, the Estakel V'Oraisa V'Oraomo, you'll hear the natural course of how this world works. And what's interesting is, if you look at Shmita and Shabbos, they actually share this very common theme, that the pasuk that speaks about Shabbos first says Sheshes Yomim Tasa Melacha. Then it says, sorry. First, the pasuk says Rachashim Shabbos Lekachay Sheshes Yomim Tasa Melacha. And the question, is, supposedly Shabbos should come after an entire week. Yeah, we have the same question when it comes to Shmita. It says, I can't find the pasuk right now, but the pasuk first preempts Shmita, and then it says that Sheva Shonim, Sheva Pom, you're supposed to work the rest of the years, and then the seventh year you rest. And both of these seem to be out of sync, because the natural would be to first say what you're supposed to do, and then what's the result of it. So first you're supposed to work, and then the result is Shabbos. But the way we understand it, it's really the other way around. Because in order for a Shabbos to take place, in order for a world to take place, you need to, in order to understand the Sheshes Yomim, Tasa Melacha, in order to understand what's the point of the Sheshes, of my work in this world, you first need to have a Zochus Yom Shabbos Lekachem. Before you go ahead and you spend 7 days doing my shtadlus, bringing the parnasa, working the land, working the field, then you first have to stand Zochus Yom Shabbos Lekachay. You first have to be at that level where you understand that Shabbos, the inactivity, can also create that. And not only that, if not for the Sheshes Yomim Tasa Melacha, we won't have a Shabbos Hashem Lekech. If not for the Zochus Yom Shabbos Lekachay, we wouldn't have 6 days. We wouldn't have a week that has any meaning, because we wouldn't be able to go through a week and actually realize that this is not my Ishtadlus. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's work. And the same is true Lekabi Shmita. That the Torah first has to say, keep Shmita. See what happens when there's inactivity. See what happens when it's silent. And once we understand that that's also a darga, and that at that level you can also see Hashem's ma'asiyodim in your work, then you can go ahead and look at those 7 days of Shemitah. So it comes out. And if I can add very quickly, if I've got within the minute, that this is the same idea when it comes to Matan Torah. In Matan Torah, we're told to count 7 weeks and 7 days, which really 7 days are just waiting and just counting. And Matan Torah comes as a result of us counting towards something, and of course there's spheres and there's things that go into that, but it's the inactivity, it's the counting towards Matan Torah, and the Matan Torah will eventually come to and show us that Har Sinai really, really occurs when everyone's silent, everyone listens, and everyone's not focusing on the work, everyone's focusing on the end goal. And with this we can understand these two midrashim. We started off, why does Gevurah Koyach Chesed Devarim specifically refer to these two in Yonim, one of Shmita, and on the other side, it also refers to Matan Torah? Because the same message, the same Gevurah Koyach Chesed Devarim, Yishmaya B'Koyel Devarim, listen to the sound, sometimes the loudest of sounds is really silence. The loudest, at a time where everything's quiet, you can really hear the voice of Hashem. And specifically at Mamet Har Sinai, specifically at when it comes to Shemitah, where we stop and we let everything be silent, at that time we can really hear the real messages of Shemitah. Shkoyach, thank you very much everyone for listening, and very good Shabbos. Shabbos.
We have to still the haluchos of Avdule.